So, Michelle, we were talking about...
Are we back on?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I should clarify one thing.
Okay.
I've had a sex change operation.
Okay.
And what I'm talking about when I was in college and entering the military was decades before that operation. Mm-hmm. So in those days, I was ostensibly a male.
Okay, sure.
Posing as one, you know, and acting as one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like in those days, you had to be 21, a female had to be 21 to enlist without parental permission. But a guy could enlist at 18 without parental permission.
And that's where you were then. You were 18.
That's where I was then.
And a young man, and so you were deciding on your own what to do.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went into the recruiter. There was a recruiting station at the intersection of the Grand Concourse and the Fordham Road in the Bronx. There was an overpass of Fordham Road over the Grand Concourse, and right in the middle of the overpass on the north side were Army and Air Force recruiters. On the south side were Marine and Navy and maybe Coast Guard recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided Army because I'd been taking Army ROTC, so I figured the ROTC would give me a little leg up.
Right.
Turned out it really didn't.
Okay.
So I went in and spoke to a recruiter, Master Sergeant Green. I'm surprised I remember his name.
Uh-huh.
And told him I wanted to go into electronics.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So he talked me into going into the Army Air Defense program with the Nike missiles, and I could get electronics training.
Did he tell you much about that weapons system? Did he, and obviously not in detail, but did he kind of describe to you its purpose and that it was brand new and all that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Nike Ajax system had been around for quite a number of years. The Nike Hercules system had been around just for a year or two and replacing the Ajax. And
right.
Of course, there was, you know, basically he had a quota for that.
Okay.
That's what he was pushing.
Sure.
Because there were a lot of other electronics I could have gotten into, like radio, radar, cryptography, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, so I went through the whole bit, went down to 39 Whitehall Street, which had been New York City's recruiting main station since time immemorial,
mm-hmm.
and took all the tests and everything, and then went to the Air Defense Command's representative there to discuss initial assignments. And he told me that, unfortunately, my eyesight was too bad to get into that. And he referred me to the Army Security Agency representative who had me and said, based on my test scores, I'd be very suited for that. I went there, and he had me fill out all sorts of security paperwork and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
About a week or two later, I got a call from Sergeant Green back at the recruiting station telling me that the Army Security Agency has rejected me on security clearance reasons because my grandfather was born in Hungary, which is a communist country, and my other grandparents were born in Russia and Poland, which were communist countries. And he had another alternative for me, which was Nike missile electronics repair, which I found out earlier that what he had first told me about would have just gotten me into the Air Defense Command, most likely as a crewman, and not having anything to do with electronics. Like most salespeople, he lied to me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But he got me into this Air Defense Electronics Maintenance Program school, which was like a six-month course or so that actually did teach electronics. The first 8 weeks were nothing but basic electronics, basic electrical and electronic training.
Mm-hmm.
very similar to what I had already learned in high school physics and on my own. And I got into that field that way. And that course was at Fort Bliss, Texas in El Paso. And that's where I met this best friend of mine I mentioned, who I lived near in Virginia, in the D.C. area.
Okay. Now, let me just ask you a couple of questions there. Were you upset or in any way disappointed about that security clearance rejection? Did that make any sense to you?
It didn't make any sense to me because, as far as I knew, I didn't have any family living in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this was 1961, in the middle of the Cold War, and people were still somewhat paranoid.
Yes.
Even though McCarthyism was pretty much dead, there were things still lingering on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Did the electronics maintenance program, did you get descriptive material about that from Sergeant Green?
I don't recall.
Okay. But you knew in any event that you were on your way to basic training and then to an advanced course that was likely to be at Fort Bliss?
Right.
Okay. Tell me about basic training. First of all, where did you do that and when did you go in?
I went in on the 9th of March of 61, Fort Dix, New Jersey. Spent a week at the reception center, you know, taking more tests, getting shots.
Mm-hmm.
Getting fitted for uniforms, getting issued the uniforms and all that stuff, and wound up taking basic training in Fort Dix also.
Okay. How did you fare during the basic training program?
I managed to survive.
Okay. What was the experience the sort of stereotypical one, where you have drill instructors in your face and no privacy and dawn?
Yeah, pretty much, except that was before the days that they called them drill instructors.
Okay, what did they call them back then?
I think they were called cadre.
Okay.
We called them sergeant.
Yes, sir.
And sir, yeah.
Yes. Did you do weapons training during basic?
Yes, everybody did.
Okay, can you tell me what weapons you qualified on?
The M1 rifle.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Had you been doing any shooting before in your experience?
I was in the scouts, when I was about 13 or so, I shot a .22
uh-huh.
rifle, and my dad had bought me a BB gun at some point
uh-huh.
when I was maybe 10 or so.
Uh-huh. How did you do with the M1? Was it easy for you to pick it up and?
I didn't fire expert. I think I fired sharpshooter, which is a middle grouping.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Basic qualification was marksman, then sharpshooter, and then expert.
Mm-hmm.
I almost fired expert.
Okay. And what about the physical training? Were you in pretty good shape?
No.
No? Was that tougher?
And I don't know. I still to this day don't know how I managed to pass the physical, the PT test. But I did pass it.
Okay, and so you left Fort Dix then during the late spring, would that be correct?
Let's see, went into March 9th, so I finished in early May.
Okay, and did you go directly then down to Fort Bliss?
I had about a week or two leave that I took at home.
Okay, how did that go? Do you remember it at all?
Basically, I went home and spent time at home, just
okay.
like I had never been gone.
Oh, really? Okay.
Let's see. One incident, you know, my folks came to our graduation parade at basic training.
Well, they did. Uh-huh.
And drove me home.
Okay, uh-huh.
When we got out of the elevator in the apartment house, my dad insisted on taking my duffel bag for me. So when we got out of the elevator, he started dragging the duffel bag on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Dad, please don't drag it. That thing has to last me at least 3 years. And I forget his exact words, but he indicated great approval because I was actually thinking about the future. And he lifted it up and carried it.
Jolly good. I was going to ask. He sounds like an okay dad.
Yeah, oh, Dad was wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He was not perfect. I don't think any dad was, but no. he was. I have no complaints about him.
Well, that's more than very many people can say, as I know you know. Tell me about arriving down at Fort Bliss. Do you remember that trip?
I remember some things about it. I decided for some reason to go a day or two early. So I'm sitting in the lounge room at Kennedy, well, in those days, Idlewild Airport.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Waiting for them to call the plane to arrive and board. And an Army captain walks in. And I pop up the attention, all the books on my lap falling off, saluting. And he says, "You don't have to do that here, son."
Really?
So
that's cool.
When we arrive and we're waiting at the luggage area,
mm-hmm.
I said, "I'm actually not supposed to report in until tomorrow or the day after. I forget which. What would happen if I reported in early?" And he said, "Well, if you were in my company, I'd have my first sergeant put you on some sort of detail until your reporting date. So I suggest you find a hotel or something and enjoy El Paso for a day or two."
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I reported into Fort Bliss and found the right building to go to. And went through all the in-processing at the holding company for new students. And
yeah.
Then we got transferred to our student company and assigned barracks, billets and beds there and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I remember.
Now, how long did the advanced training last?
As I said, I think it was about 6 months.
Okay.
I forget.
So perhaps all the way through the end of the year almost.
Yeah, actually, yes, almost just about through the end of the year.
Okay. And were you, can you describe a basic outline of your daily activities there? How much were you in the classroom and how much were you elsewhere?
Basically, what we had was I got up in the morning, did all our morning stuff, got into formation, marched to the classroom. I'm not even sure. No, I don't even think we marched to the classroom. We walked there on our own. Went into class, broke for lunch, came back to the mess hall, went back to the classroom. Classes were from like 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. with an hour for lunch, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's been over 40 years. And our evenings were free.
And were you able to go off base then?
After the first month, I think it was.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the very new people were restricted to base for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, I forget how long.
And then later on you had a little bit more freedom.
Right.
Okay. Can you tell me what the curriculum was, just in general terms, if you remember?
Well, the first 8 weeks, as I said, was basic electronics.
Mm-hmm.
We learned what a resistor was, capacitor, coil. We built a AM radio out of stock parts, learned how to wire things, just to learn the principles of electronics.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we went to our missile courses where they started us with the theory of how the missile works, of how the electronics work on the missile, how things go, the pulse codes that are sent from the how the acquisition radars find the target,
mm-hmm.
then how you have another radar tracking the target, another radar tracking the missile and sending commands to the missile to guide it to the target.
Yep.
And we got a tour of the radar area, but we weren't working on the radars, just on the missiles.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle,
were you working?
Everything about how the missile, the electronics and the mechanics of the missile worked, and on all the ground handling equipment that goes with the missiles, the electronics that operate the launcher, that the elevators on the launcher and those sites where they were on elevators.
Mm-hmm.
The emergency firing centers at the missile area, in case the firing center at the radar area, which is the main firing center, goes out. And basically that was it, day to day. We also learned the mechanics and the hydraulics, even though there was a separate MOS for people who did that stuff. We had to know how it worked because technically, you know, we had supervisory capabilities over them,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on rank and stuff, but they would never have a supervisory capability over us.
Okay, so...
Because we had, quote, superior knowledge.
Okay.
A more encompassing knowledge, actually.
Broader with of the whole missile end of the system.
Right.
Okay.
And basically that was it. In those days, the Army worked on a 5.5-day week. So every Saturday we were in classes of a different kind where we had what they called character guidance and other administrative type classes that we needed to take. And it was also Saturday mornings when we had, not every Saturday morning, when we had our inspections.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty relaxed. It was more of a campus atmosphere than the typical AIT atmosphere.
Yeah, it sounds very much that way.
Uh-huh.
Since you were there for quite a long time.
Yeah, but it was considered an Army school rather than a training center.
Yes, and
that's how they made the distinction between mm-hmm. how the students are treated.
And this was the U.S. Army Air Defense School, correct?
This was the U.S. Army Air Defense School, right.
Okay. And were you learning both the Ajax and Hercules systems?
We learned primarily the Hercules systems.
Sure. Uh-huh.
They gave some lip service. Less than 10% of the course time was on the Ajax because, I don't know, I think the only Ajaxes that were deployed at the time were with Reserve and National Guard units.
Okay. I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the Hercules system perhaps later as we go on.
Okay.
After this period of training at the Air Defense School concluded in early January of 1962, you had an assignment, a posting.
Right.
Can you just tell us what that was and where it was?
I was assigned as an instructor at the same school.
Okay, now how did that come about?
Well, our entire class was assigned to the school at the time. Every person in my class was reassigned as permanent party or at the school.
How many people were in your class?
I don't recall. I'd say less than 24.
Really? Okay.
It was a small class.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And apparently they just didn't have any place to send us at the time. And so we were assigned, and I asked to be an instructor rather than to be one of the maintenance people in the class, and mm-hmm. they allowed me to be.
So
in the school, I mean.
So you found yourself kind of on the other side of the desk, as it were.
Right.
Talk to me about your experience as a teacher. How did that go?
Well, one of the first things they did was send me to the instructor training course.
Okay. How? Where was that? Also within Fort Bliss?
Yeah, that was within the same school. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
And basically, it was 2 weeks on how to be an instructor.
Okay.
Very similar to public speaking classes in college. Except that it's focused on teaching rather than just giving a speech.
Okay.
And teaching the Army by the Army that way.
Mm-hmm. For those who don't get that reference, could you say a little bit more about teaching the Army way?
Well, basically, you have a program of a lesson plan, and they taught us how to write lesson plans.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what you do is you... First, you get up, you introduce yourself, you tell them what the subject is, you tell them why they need to know this subject, then you tell them what you're going to teach them, then you teach them, then you review what you taught them, and then you have a question and answer session. You ask them for any questions they may have to cover things,
mm-hmm.
and then you ask them questions to feedback. Actually, I think first you ask them questions to get feedback to see if they actually knew
mm-hmm.
what you were doing,
mm-hmm.
or not what you were doing, but what you were teaching.
Right.
And during the presentation, you'd ask questions also, either leading questions to lead into a subject or check questions to see if they actually got it.
If they're getting it, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you finish up by recapping what you told them and giving them motivation again why they need to remember it.
Okay. And this is all very content-driven, is that right?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It was not education, it was training.
Right. When do you remember your first day in front of a class?
No.
Okay.
No, they all blur together.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wondered if you could rate yourself as an instructor. How did you do you think?
Well, the reviews I got from when my presentations were rated were all very high.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedbacks from students at the end of their classes were high, so I'd say I did very well.
Okay. And did you feel good about it?
Oh, yes, I enjoyed it.
Great. After teaching for a little bit, I think into the middle of 1962, did you then move on back to New Jersey? Is that right?
New York? You mean home?
No, I meant to Fort Belvoir.
I'm missing something here.
Okay. I was wondering what let me just ask you, your next assignment after that instructorship at Fort Bliss.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was in Hawaii.
Oh, okay, Hawaii. What happened there?
Okay. The Army had gotten ready to deploy the Nike missile in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
Traditionally, the Hawaii National Guard always handled the air defense of the islands.
Okay.
The Nike missile had nuclear warheads.
Mm-hmm.
Not every missile, but a number of the missiles in each missile battery had nuclear warheads.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government was very reluctant to give control of nuclear warheads to state governors.
Right.
So basically what they did was put a regular Army component at each missile site. We stayed in the guard shack of the missile site, of what they called the exclusion area, the area where the missiles and the weapons and the warheads were stored and ready to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a safe in that guard shack with the arm plugs for the warheads. Without these arm plugs plugged into the into the missile, the warhead can never detonate.
Right, uh-huh.
And this was to keep federal control.
Okay.
And they decided they would have the maintenance people like us doing this, which was really a military police job, because whenever the warhead was open, there was an open access to the warhead, one of us regular Army types had to be there,
okay.
Even if there was no arm plug there, because mm-hmm. that was so that the regular Army could have control and make sure that the state people did not commit sabotage.
Okay. And were you actually briefed that that was the situation and that was the purpose of your being there?
Right.
Okay.
And no, and they said, we don't necessarily, you know, it's not that we don't trust the governor of Hawaii, but we have to set a precedent for all states, because you wouldn't want George Wallace to have access to nuclear warheads, would you?
Was that actually said to you in a briefing?
Unofficially.
Uh-huh. Wow.
You know, not during the official briefing,
mm-hmm.
but yes, the name George Wallace was definitely mentioned.
Wow.
I'm going to shut the door on the TV room okay. where my partner is watching TV because
sure.
it's getting a bit noisy.
That's okay. Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't know if you were hearing it.
I was actually hearing it a little bit.
Okay.
But that's fine, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Michelle, how long were you in Hawaii, and where did you actually live?
Let's see. I was in Hawaii. I got there in 62, spring of 62.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there, I think, 14 months. I had my tour cut short because I got into another school.
Okay.
But where was I living? Part of the time at Schofield Barracks, well, let's see. When we first got there at the Schofield Barracks in transient quarters.
Uh-huh.
And my first assignment was at the Nike Missile Base at Bellows Air Force Base. So they actually quartered us at Fort Shafter, made us, attached us there. We were not assigned any units at Fort Shafter. We were actually assigned to the G3 of U.S. Army Hawaii, which was at Schofield. Fort Shafter at the time was U.S. Army Pacific headquarters, and we were assigned to the headquarters detachment, or attached to the headquarters detachment for rations and quarters.
Okay. Where were the Nike sites? Can you?
Well, the one I was at that time was at the Bellows Air Force Base, which was on Waimanalo,
mm-hmm.
or near the town of Waimanalo. It was a low altitude in the sighting. It was just off the beach. Eventually, the Nikes were completely taken out of the system. But about 2 years ago, I was visiting my daughter in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and my partner and I went to Bellows Air Force Base, and I went up to the gate where that Nike site had been.
Mm-hmm.
The gate was locked. The chain and lock were rusted, and the road that actually led into the area was just about completely overgrown with foliage.
Is that right?
It looks like the last person out locked the gate, which was like 10 or 20 years ago.
And they just walked away.
And walked away, and no one's been inside since.
Wow.
But I couldn't tell because, any place I could see where that fence was around the area, all I could see were trees and bushes.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what's inside there.
How many of the actual missile emplacements with elevators and erectors were there around Fort Bellows? Was it a composite of, say, three such sites or five?
Well, Bellows had just one site, one missile battery.
Okay, one battery.
Each missile site in the island had one battery.
Okay. And can you say how many missiles were stored for the batteries? Not necessarily warheads, but you don't really know?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I think there were three sections of four missiles each, but I
uh-huh.
really don't know.
Okay. Was it strange to you to be on that same turf again and to see it in your mind's eye? It must have looked so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a strange thing.
It was a bit strange. My son-in-law is in the Army, and he's stationed in Hawaii. So,
mm-hmm.
May 2 years ago, my partner and I went there. She and my daughter had never met.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen my older grandson in 3 or 4 years. Well, let's see. We went there for his third birthday. So it was his fourth birthday. Fourth birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't seen him in like 2 years.
Oh, boy.
And my younger grandson was about 6 months old, and I had never seen him.
So there was a lot going on that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we wanted to take a vacation. We had never really had a vacation together of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except for a weekend trip to Vegas once.
Mm-hmm.
But not just a nice vacation. And so we spent like a week and a half in Hawaii.
Beautiful. It sounds beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Sounds great. And especially with those little kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you go? Now, you said that you received notice that you had were eligible to enter another school.
Okay, well, it wasn't that I applied to another school.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
That was the Army's West Point Preparatory School.
Okay.
Which was at Fort Belvoir in those days.
How did you come to identify that as somewhere that you wanted to go?
The officer in charge I was working for was a West Point graduate.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember his name?
Veal, like in the meat.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I found out much later on when I happened to bump into someone who I had known way back then that he eventually got out of the Army and after finishing his initial commitment and went to dental school.
Really?
Yeah.
But was he talking up the academy a little bit to you in the preparatory school?
Well, he wasn't talking it up to me,
mm-hmm.
but he was the first West Pointer I had ever met, and you know, so a lot of us were asking him questions about it.
Yes, it was intriguing.
So I started looking into West Point and found out about the preparatory school.
Now, did you actually leave the islands to go to Fort Belvoir?
Yes, when I was accepted to the prep school, I left Hawaii and got transferred to the prep school.
Okay, so that would be in the middle of 1963?
Right.
Okay.
Class started in August,
uh-huh.
So I went home and took some leave with my folks, and they drove me down to Fort Belvoir, which is south of D.C.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's still, now it's considered the D.C. metropolitan area because the metropolitan area has expanded so much.
Right. What was the academy like? Can you describe your experience there?
Okay, well, let's see. We'd have four classes each morning, two math classes, two English classes. And then in the afternoons, we'd have physical training. Wednesday afternoons, we'd have Army mandatory classes like character guidance and other administrative stuff. And we had study hall in the evenings.
How did you do as a new academician?
I was always in the top academic class. They broke the student body by academic classes.
Okay.
They started us out based on aptitude test scores, and then after each block of instruction, which lasted 4 or 6 weeks, they regrouped us based on our grades.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was always in that top class, usually near the top of the class. Only once was I ever the top person in the class, though.
Mm-hmm. You probably had some pretty heavy competition.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. What was the criteria to get in? Do you have any idea?
The criteria to get into the class was we basically took aptitude tests.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. I think I had to appear before a board, and I had to pass a medical test. They have since added. Physical conditioning tests, which they didn't have when I went in.
Mm-hmm.
If they had it when I went in, I would not have gotten in.
That wasn't going to be your strong point.
That was my weakest point in the school.
Okay. Were there any instructors? Well, describe the instructors. Were they all military personnel?
So the academic instructors were all civilians.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. They were hired for their academic abilities.
Were there any persons there who were teaching who impressed you?
I can remember faces, but I can't remember any names.
Sure, sure, that happens. How long was the curriculum designed over? Was it over a one-year period or 6 months? Or was it?
It was over primarily a year period. You started in August.
Uh-huh.
And you graduated, I think, the following July.
Mm-hmm.
I withdrew from it in January, though.
Now, why did you leave?
Because I could tell that because of my physical conditioning problems that I would never have been accepted into West Point anyway.
Okay. Did
and my leadership skills weren't all that great.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very strong competition with leadership skills.
Right.
So I figured, you know, I could stay on, you know, loaf through the academics and still get all the top grades and put up with all the BS for the disciplinary and physical stuff, or I could get out of the school.
And in getting out, what was available to you? What were your options?
Basically, my options were to give my preferences for station of what posts I would like to be assigned to.
Okay.
What installations?
And what installations did you put down? Did you?
One of them was Fort Bliss. I forget what other installations I put down.
Okay.
I went to Fort Bliss.
And did you return then to be an instructor?
Not initially.
Okay. What was the initial setup?
The initial setup was a Nike missile mobile tactical unit that only mission was to get ready to be deployed somewhere, somewhen.
Okay. So you had to be on readiness? Was that?
Well, basically, we were not on a readiness status, per se.
Uh-huh.
We just went in, and we mostly killed time. did make work stuff.
Okay. How many people were attached to this? Was it a battalion, did you say?
There was just one battalion with three batteries, I guess.
Okay. What was the personnel complement, do you know?
Whatever was standard for a battery at the time.
Okay.
I don't know if we were up to full strength or not.
Uh-huh. Were you pleased to be back at Fort Bliss?
I was pleased to be back at Fort Bliss, but I hated that unit.
Why? What was going on?
Because, like most military units that don't have a mission, all the military BS becomes the primary things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was more about your, the shine on your boots, metaphorically anyway.
Yeah, the shine on your boots. Mm-hmm. The PT was a big thing. You go into the work area, you sit around, have coffee, eat donuts, play pinochle. Every so often you'll go out and do your preventative maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
On the vehicles and on the missile equipment and stuff. I don't even think we had any missiles. But we had all the equipment that goes with them.
Sure. And the supposed mission, again, was that you were supposed to be ready to move?
Yeah, but we were the type of thing where if we had to go somewhere, we'd be given at least a month's notice.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Would it be fair to say, Michelle, that you were bored?
It would be fair to say that, yes.
Yeah. And were you looking around for something, some other way to, to continue to serve, but, you know, somewhere else?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you transition to becoming an instructor again?
Basically, I re-enlisted.
Oh, okay. So your commitment?
I re-enlisted to become assigned to the school.
Okay.
Air Defense School.
And was that in 1964?
Either late 63 or early. It was probably late 63.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I don't think I was at that assignment more than 3 to 6 months.
And just as an aside, at that time, of course, the president was shot.
The president was shot while I was still at the Air Defense School. At the West Point Prep School.
Oh, okay. Can you just step aside from your own career path here for a moment and tell me if you recall anything about that moment, where you were and what you were doing? And how?
Oh, yes, I can.
Okay.
That and the first man on the moon, I don't think I will ever forget.
Mm-hmm.
We were in one of these Wednesday afternoon classes. And the first sergeant, we just finished a break between classes. The first sergeant got up and said, "Now listen up, everyone, this is hot." And then the captain from the back of the class said, "Excuse me, First Sergeant, this is hotter. We just heard on the radio reports that President Kennedy has been shot. We don't know if these reports are true. We don't know what the president's condition is. We will keep you informed." The First Sergeant finished his class, and we had a short break. The chaplain came up for the character guidance, and before he could talk, the captain came back in and said, "We have heard, it is confirmed, President Kennedy, President Kennedy is dead. We will give you more information as we find out." The chaplain then led us in a prayer and finished his class. The colonel came in and said, "We are waiting on word from headquarters as to what should be done. In the meantime, we will continue our business as usual. We are now scheduled to have physical training. So go back to your barracks, change into your physical training gear, and fall out as usual at the prescribed time." We did that. Of course, you can imagine all the discussion. I said, you know, when we were in the barracks, I said, "I can't believe it." Which is I meant it as a figure of speech. Someone took that literally and said, "You better believe it, Steiner. Blah, 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 blah."
Really?
Yeah. You know, don't delude yourself. This is reality. I used it as a figure of speech. Like, you know, this is incredible.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and he took me literally.
Did you personally feel a tug at that time?
Well, you heard how I choked up when I was.
Yes, yes, I don't want to press you on it.
That's okay.
It's
yes.
I
did
wondered
feel
if you
a tug.
Yes, if he was if he meant something to you outside of just being the constitutionally elected head of government.
It must have been,
Yes.
My family, I was raised in a Democrat family. Kennedy was a very charismatic person. And even though he barely won the election, it's still that he was, he was a person that everybody that I grew up with, voted for.
Yes.
His election was November 60, while I was in that first semester of college, still living in, in a heavily Democratic part of the country. And as I said, a very charismatic person who brought loyalties, affected people very deeply.
Yes. I think even those of us who don't actually remember him can get some feel for that from film and from listening to him.
Right.
But first-person accounts, I think, are really important. Let's go back to Fort Bliss and to your reinstatement, I guess, if that's fair to say, as an instructor. How did you do the second time around? Was it still a good thing for you to be doing, Michelle?
Yes, it was. Okay. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Did you have contributions to make to the curriculum? Was the curriculum set?
Curriculum was set.
Okay.
It had been set for decades.
Okay.
Well, maybe not decades, but
it felt like it.
the curriculum No, for the military instruction methodology, it had been set for decades.
Yes.
The curriculum for the missile had been set for years.
Okay. And there was no movement on that.
There was no need to move.
Okay. It was good?
Yeah, it was good. The missiles had not changed. No, there any change in the electronics or stuff on the missiles, you know, that the curriculum would change for that, but at a higher level than where I was.
Okay.
Basically, we were told what to teach.
You were delivering it.
Right.
Not packaging it, as it were.
Yeah, we were the messenger.
Okay. Okay. I wonder if you can talk for just a minute or two about the Hercules system. You've mentioned that there was the potential for the missiles to be armed with nuclear warheads and that was true when you were in Hawaii.
Right.
But can you also talk a little bit about the, at least my understanding is that the fuel system was different between the Hercules and the Ajax systems. Is that
true? Yes.
Can you say anything about that or about...
The Ajax had a liquid fuel system. Mm-hmm. The Hercules had a solid fuel system.
Was the solid fuel preferable?
Yes, it was much more stable.
Uh-huh.
It was safer. It was easier to transport. Because now they both used solid fuel boosters.
Okay. Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, the Hercules booster was four Ajax boosters clustered together.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But the fuel on the missile itself, on the Ajax, you had two tanks, one for the fuel, one for the oxidizer. Mm-hmm. And you could not, and the two were hypergolic. If they came into contact, they ignited.
Yes.
So you had to be very careful, you know, in using equipment for one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It went as far as the... When you put the hose to fill or drain it into the spout, you actually had to screw it in to make it solid, to make sure it didn't fall out. And
mm-hmm.
the oxidizers had reverse threads.
And by
counterclockwise instead of clockwise.
Okay, and what was the significance of that?
So that you could not put a fuel line, connect a fuel line to an oxidizer line,
okay.
or vice versa.
So it was a built-in... preventative to
right.
the horrendous...
And if I remember correctly, and I can't say this for sure,
mm-hmm.
they were also color-coded.
Okay.
They had different colors.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the Nike Hercules mission? What was this weapon designed to do?
Its primary mission was to shoot down bombers.
And so it was placed in what kinds of locations?
Coastal areas.
Okay.
Also around major cities within the country.
Mm-hmm.
Because some bombers would fly too high, you know, to get over the coast, or, you know, they'd fly over Canada.
Sure.
And then come in across the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they were... centered around major cities and coastal, and especially around the coast.
Now, as someone who was trained in electronics background, were you observing the role of electronic computers with regard to the targeting of the missiles?
No, that was at the other end. That was at the radar end.
Okay. And that was a separate location.
That was a separate location.
Mm-hmm.
Those people received longer training than we did
because
they had to maintain both the radars and the computers.
Okay.
The interesting thing is that the Nike used analog computers rather than digital computers.
Really?
Huh?
Huh. Yeah.
Analog computers were cheaper to make in those days.
Okay. Uh-huh.
You know, basically a digital computer in those days was a UNIVAC or something like that.
Right, a big... One of the big, right.
Yeah, the IBM 360 that could fit into a big trailer hadn't even been invented yet.
Right. Which for us even now is, you know.
Ancient history.
It's a dinosaur. It's a time warp.
But
I think it will be a matter of interest in the future, the initial introductions and And
so all I knew about the computers was that they were analog computers. They did mention that to us.
Okay. How long did you stay this time at Fort Bliss as an instructor?
Let's see. I left there sometime in 64, about the summer of 64, I think.
Okay. And
maybe spring.
Under what circumstances did you leave, Michelle?
I had applied to go into Army Counterintelligence and was accepted, so I went to the Army Intelligence School, which in those days was at Fort Hollaberg, Maryland.
Okay. Just outside, well, actually now part of Baltimore.
Yeah, well, it was still part of Baltimore then.
Okay, just a few miles south of downtown, I guess.
Yeah.
Michelle, this is, I guess, maybe the second time that you had applied for another school.
Uh-huh.
And were you unhappy, would you say, with the Air Defense school?
I can't say I was unhappy. I was not ecstatic.
Uh-huh.
But basically what happened at one of these Saturday morning classes, an Army intelligence special agent made a pitch for people to apply for the school and told us all the good things that would happen if we were in an Army intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And it appealed to me.
So you sort of put your hand in the air and took some of the entrance tests?
Well, basically, you know, not literally put my hand in
the
air.
Sure.
I just had to go and fill out paperwork.
Figuratively, okay. And do you know whether an additional security clearance was run on you at this time?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. And evidently it turned out differently than the first one had.
Well, the first time, basically back in 61, I don't even think they actually ran a clearance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened, and this is just a gut feeling, is that Sergeant Green lied to me and basically told ASA one thing that I didn't want to go and told me that I was turned down so he could get me into Army Air Defense somehow to meet his quota. This is just a gut feeling. I have no idea if that's what happened.
Because certainly things did turn out differently for you in 1964.
Yeah.
When you applied to the Army Intelligence School.
Right.
Were you happy to find out that you had been accepted?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Did you have any kind of break between your leaving Fort Bliss and your reporting to Fort Hollaberg?
Yes, I went home on leave again.
Okay. And what was everything okay at home? Your parents okay and everything?
Yeah, everything was fine.
Okay. And were they, would you say, proud of you?
They were proud of me overall, but you know, nothing, you know, my getting into intelligence was just, you know, just another step in my Army stuff.
Oh, okay. So it kind of all seemed the same to them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But they were supportive, would you still say?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. Tell me about Fort Hollaberg. Do you remember arriving there?
No.
Okay. Once you were on the ground there, what was an average day like?
An average day basically was 8 hours of class, interrupted by an hour of lunch.
Okay. So you're doing all kinds of classroom work. Can you talk about the curriculum?
Let's see. I can't say in what orders we learned these, but
mm-hmm.
we learned how to touch type. We learned Army security regulations. We learned how to conduct interviews.
Mm-hmm.
We learned how to write reports of our interviews. We learned how to conduct security surveys and inspections to make sure that security procedures were being followed and that classified documents and equipment were maintained properly. We learned the principles behind adjudicating security clearances. We learned how to do surveillances. Both vehicular and pedestrian.
Mm-hmm.
We did those in downtown Baltimore.
Okay.
And the vehicular, we expanded that area.
Mm-hmm.
We learned a little bit about counter-espionage. techniques. We learned how to interrogate as opposed to interview.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of report writing, as I said. Everything we did, we had to write a report on.
Okay.
And then once we got out of school, that was true, too. Anything we did, we had to write a report on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that was basically it.
And the coursework lasted over an entire year?
No, the coursework lasted from about 6 months, I would say.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, 6 months.
Now, how did you do as a student this year?
I graduated number one in my class.
Did you really?
Yeah.
When did you graduate?
Excuse me?
When did you graduate?
In the fall of, in the late summer of 65.
Can you explain coming out number one in the class? Were you driven? Were you motivated? Was this material that that appealed to you?
I wasn't driven or motivated. I wasn't driven. I was
okay.
Motivated.
Uh-huh.
Everybody in the class was motivated.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I didn't know I was number one graduate until we hit our graduation ceremony.
What happened at the ceremony?
Well, basically, they said, okay, Steiner, you're number one. You're the number one graduate. You sit here. We had figured out among ourselves from remembering what all the grades were that somebody else was number one and I was number two.
Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a surprise then.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me and everyone else in the class.
Did you make friends with some of the other guys in the class?
Not really.
Okay.
Close acquaintances.
Uh-huh. What were some of their backgrounds? Were they from all around the U.S. Army?
Yes.
Okay. Were there any people there who were not U.S. Army people?
In my class, no. In some of the other classes, they had Navy and Air Force people.
Okay. Can you tell me anything about your instructors?
Well, we had one guy who was African-American, really short and thin. He was a lieutenant colonel and extremely animated. And extremely left-wing.
Really?
Much as you can be within the Army. But
remember?
He was saying, you don't remember the March on Washington?
He sounds cool. He sounds like an interesting man.
Yeah, he was. I don't remember his name.
Okay.
And we had a few people who, in retrospect, I could say were very conservative.
Yes, uh-huh.
They were the people who taught us about communism.
Okay.
In our political theory classes.
What did you learn about communism?
The standard propaganda line of the U.S. government.
Okay.
I can't remember any details.
Sure, okay.
there is one thing I do need to bring up about this class.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We were in a very small class, only 13 or 14 students.
Okay.
One woman, genetic, other than me, I mean.
Sure.
And the rest guys.
Mm-hmm.
There was one class when we were talking about requirements for security clearance, and the question came up, can homosexuals have security clearances?
Mm-hmm.
And the instructor pretty much left it open for open debate within the class.
Really?
Yeah. But bringing up things. Now, what if this person, the terms closet and out didn't exist in those days.
Right.
But, so I'm going to paraphrase. What if this person is out and not in the closet? He doesn't care who knows he's homosexual. He can't be blackmailed because everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone threatens to blackmail him by telling someone, he says, go ahead, I don't care.
Right.
So he was putting in these leading questions.
Right.
Out of the 13 of us, 12 of us were saying, sure, why not? If he can't be blackmailed and he has nothing to hide and, he can't be sexually entrapped, Why not?
Right.
One person who did come from the South was saying he's homosexual, he can't, he shouldn't have a security clearance.
Period.
Why? Because he's homosexual. But why shouldn't he have a why shouldn't he have a security clearance? Because he's homosexual.
Right.
Because he's homosexual.
It just kept going around.
That was it. He's homosexual, he can't have a security clearance. That was it to him.
Huh.
All the others of us there was no problem. As long as a person was out and not subject to blackmail or entrapment, we saw no problem with it.
That's interesting.
By the way, one of the requirements in this class, to get into this class, was you had to be over 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Another requirement was you had to have an Army GT score of 115 or higher.
Okay.
Which meant, if you equate GT scores with IQ,
mm-hmm.
which means that you had to be in the top third percentile, 67th percentile or higher.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And by means of comparison, to get into officer candidate school, you could get in with a GT score of 110.
Okay, so.
So they were more restrictive as far as, quote, IQ,
mm-hmm.
than to get into officer candidate school.
Now,
so after we went on with this open debate in the class,
mm-hmm.
In 40-year retrospect, I'd say 15 to 30 minutes out of a 50-minute class,
mm-hmm.
the instructor said, the official U.S. Army and U.S. government policy is that homosexuals cannot have security clearances, and this is the policy regardless of what any of us thinks of it. And then we moved on to another subject.
Did you think that was because there was a sense that homosexuals were psychologically, had psychological difficulties that they couldn't overcome?
This was before the APA removed homosexuality from the DSM.
Right, so it was in the DSM or whatever the equipment was.
Yeah.
As a psychological disturbance.
Yeah, and it wasn't until Bill Clinton that this policy was rescinded.
Yes. You remember this conversation, the open conversation, because of the way it ended particularly?
Among other things, and the fact that this guy had no logic behind his thought.
Sure.
And that it was a 12-to-1 opinion.
But nevertheless, the rule was the rule.
And the rule was the rule.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other incidents from your time at the school that you recall that you can talk about?
That was basically it.
Mm-hmm.
There was one rumor going around the school that has been in every Army school I've ever been to or heard about.
Okay.
That some sergeant male and some private female had been caught at some unspecified date having intercourse in a dumpster.
In a dumpster, specifically.
In a dumpster.
I
have heard that at every Army installation I have ever been at,
mm-hmm.
where there was a school, and even in some installations where there wasn't a school.
Well,
and I've heard it from other people who said that they've heard it where they were, in places that I hadn't been.
Well, it's a fairly unsavory image, so perhaps...
But it was always that the senior person was male and the junior person was female.
Of course. That fits.
And in some cases, somebody would point out to a WAC and say, that's the WAC. And I say, how do you know? So-and-so told me. How does he know? I don't know.
Well, she's the only WAC around here. So, actually, that points up a question that possibly could be of interest. The woman that was the as you said, genetic woman who was in your class.
Yeah.
Well, she was a WAC, I take it.
Right.
Do you remember her or anything about her?
Ah.
Where she was from, or?
I don't remember where she was from.
Uh-huh.
she had had some Army time already, because I believe she was an E-4.
Okay,
We had some people fresh out of basic in our class.
Okay.
Uh-huh. We've had our highest-ranking person in our class was an E-7.
What was your rank at this time?
I was an E-5, a Spec 5.
Okay.
Uh-huh. She was tall, about 5'7", 5'8", maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Thin. And mannish-looking.
Was she smart?
Yeah, that we were all smart.
Mm-hmm. What was the dynamic with her and the other guys?
A lot of guys were trying to hit on her.
No kidding.
Including me.
Really?
She and I dated once or twice.
Okay, uh-huh. Do you think she handled the class okay as the only genetic woman there?
Yeah, she did.
Okay.
She made friends with blacks who were in some of the other classes.
Okay, mm-hmm.
And, of course, they had their own whack barracks, so she, you know.
She separated off from you guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who were the other whacks on the fort at that time? Were there other schools held at Halliburtt at that time?
No, Halliburtt had, the only thing at Halliburtt was the intelligence school.
Okay. But they had a barracks, the whacks
yeah.
did. Okay.
We had one whack instructor who was a captain.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a child, if I remember correctly. I think I remember her mentioning she had a child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall whether she had a husband at the time.
Okay.
I don't know if she was married, divorced, or widowed, or.
Mm-hmm.
But based on Army policy at the time, I know she didn't have a child out of wedlock.
Sure, sure, right. Because Army policy at that time around unwed mothers was what?
The interesting thing was that she had a child, period. In those days, if a woman had a child, she was out of the Army.
Yes.
So they made an exception in her case for some reason.
Hmm. Interesting. And she was, as you said, an instructor.
Yeah.
Do you remember what content she was teaching?
No, I don't.
Okay. After your graduation, before your graduation, I'm sorry, Michelle, at what point did you learn what your posting would be?
I hadn't yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll tell you why in a moment,
mm-hmm.
but a few other incidents that I want to bring up.
Okay, please do.
While I was at the school, I bumped into a captain who had been a tactical officer when I was at the West Point Prep School.
Mm-hmm.
He was transferring, he was going to the officer basic course, transferring from the infantry to military intelligence. Sometimes it's a small world.
Yes. Was that someone you had been more or less friendly with at the prep school?
No. The TAC officers and the students,
just separated.
Cadet candidates, never mm-hmm. had any sort of social relationship whatsoever.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But he did remember me.
That's interesting.
And he was hard to forget. He was like 6'4 or 6'5, flaming red hair,
really?
And a big strawberry birthmark on his cheek.
Really? Where was he from? Do you remember?
No. He was Irish. His name was Donahue.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's all I remember about him at the time.
Uh-huh. Does he recur for you later in your career?
Well, I saw him later in my career. I was reading an issue of Time magazine, and they had an article on Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things was on military advisors, and he was the advisor that
had
picked, and there was a photograph of him there.
Huh.
And that's the only other time in my military career that he appeared in any way whatsoever.
So you saw him in Time magazine?
Yeah.
Okay. Was there another incident or two that you recalled also from that time period?
Yeah, there was two other things. We had
mm-hmm.
a captain on the base who worked at the Army Judge Advocate General office on post, whose name was James Bond.
No, seriously?
Seriously. And I read later he got into trouble for anti-war activities or sentiments.
Okay.
And then one other thing, there was a captain there named William Marvel, or Bill Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he was a lieutenant, and he got promoted to captain. So the day he got promoted, the civilian women in the school, in his office, brought him a uniform to wear.
Right. What else could they do, really?
They brought him a Captain Marvel comic book outfit that they had sewn together themselves.
They just couldn't wait for him to...
They just couldn't wait.
Right, that's funny.
And he wore that, and according to a newspaper article in the Army Times, he wore that uniform all day.
Well, at least he was a good sport about it.
Also, his commander was a good sport
yes,
about
it. Yes, I suppose.
Actually, I think his commander was in on the gag.
Mm. Well, it's kind of irresistible, really. That's good. You found out that you were going to get your first assignment after graduating. When did you actually learn what your posting would be?
Well, actually, before I got assigned to the school, I found out that immediately after graduation, I'd be going to another course at the same school.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
That was called Defense Against Methods of Entry.
And this was a special sub-course of that?
Right, it was a specialty course.
Okay, and its name again was?
Defense Against Methods of Entry.
Okay, what did that actually mean?
Basically, it taught us how to defend against surreptitious entry, against lockpicking and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
In order to teach us how to defend against lockpicking, they had to teach us how to pick locks.
Sure.
And that was most of the course.
Okay.
But they also, you know, how to pick locks, how to manipulate combination locks, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It was an 8-week course. There were 8 of us in the class. I graduated 4th.
I was going to ask, was this easy or difficult for you?
I found it somewhat difficult.
Uh-huh.
I do not have the best manual dexterity.
Uh-huh.
But I still managed to come out 4th.
Yeah, well, that's not too bad.
Partially because of the written test.
Okay. Was it training that turned out to be in any way useful?
My first assignment wound up being in the tech shop of a military intelligence unit.
Really? The tech shop?
Yeah, that's where the people who do anti-bugging
mm-hmm.
and defense against entry and photography, forensic photography, all we're assigned to.
Okay, so the
technical aspects of the field.
Right, and this was in Germany, is that right?
This was in Germany.
Okay, when did you go over to Germany?
I went over there in September of 65.
Were you pleased with getting this overseas assignment?
I would have rather stayed in the States.
Why do you say that?
Because I was familiar with the States.
Sure. Uh-huh.
I could easily travel to visit family and stuff.
Yes. When you received your posting, did you know how long it would last?
It was nominally a 3-year tour.
Okay, 3 years.
Uh-huh.
That's
what all tours in Germany were at the time.
Okay, uh-huh. I wondered if that was true. So a standard 3-year tour.
Right.
You mentioned that your assignment was to the tech shop.
Uh-huh.
Who did you report to?
My first assignment was not to the tech shop.
Okay, uh-huh.
My first assignment was in the training office.
How did that go?
So it was an administrative job, paper pushing, making assignments to other members of the unit for our weekly training program, who would teach what. It was, you know, one of these offices that had to be manned that nobody wanted to be in.
And they kind of, did they just plug you in there because you were new?
They plugged me in there because I was new and because I didn't know how to drive.
Okay, you didn't know how to drive.
Right, and that was one of the few jobs in the In the unit where you did not have to drive as part of the job.
Okay. And was it known that you didn't know how to drive before you
got there? My sponsor wrote to me back from Germany back to Fort Hollabird,
mm-hmm.
he wrote something about privately owned vehicles and stuff, and I foolishly mentioned, I don't have a car, I don't know how to drive.
Mm-hmm. So they did know that.
Yeah.
Did you repair that deficit?
Eventually.
Okay. Did you do it in Germany?
Yes.
Okay. How long were you doing? How long were you in the training office?
About 4 or 5 months, I think.
Okay. And you moved from there to the tech shop?
No. What happened was our unit got tasked to provide someone to be transferred up to the 7th Army G2 office.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was new, didn't have a driver's license, et cetera, they sent me up to be interviewed, and I was accepted, and so I was transferred to 7th Army G2.
Which was located where?
Also in the Stuttgart area.
Okay.
That's why our unit was tasked, because we were in the area.
You were right
didn't
there.
Didn't have to do pay transportation,
mm-hmm.
To move people. It was just, we'll just drive you over there and park you and, put your stuff in the back of this little truck, and there you are.
What was your job, liaison with the 7th Army G2?
No, I was actually assigned to the 7th Army G2.
Oh, okay. Was it temporary duty assignment, or...
No, it was permanent.
Okay. And how long did you stay in that office?
I stayed in that office 6 to 10 months.
Okay. What was your work like there? What did you do?
Basically, we were responsible for the policies for physical security of classified areas.
Mm-hmm.
Installations, for keeping records of the tracking of the Smell-em vehicles. Smell-em, Soviet Military Liaison Mission.
Thank you.
SMLM.
Uh-huh.
This was before Germany was reunited, of course.
Right.
And basically, the Soviet Union had a military liaison mission in each of the U.S., French, and German sectors of West Germany. And each of us had a military liaison mission in East Germany.
Yes.
And basically, members of Smell-em and us in the other areas, I would assume, were basically spies,
mm-hmm.
even though there were ostensibly military liaisons.
Okay.
And every Smell-em vehicle had to have a distinctive license plate with the flag of the nation that it of its nation.
Yes.
And basically, any time a soldier in Germany saw one of these vehicles, he had to report the license number,
mm-hmm.
The description of the vehicle, what road it was at, where on that road, and which direction it was heading,
uh-huh.
or as much of that information as he could remember.
Right. And you were in an office that was receiving these reports?
Right. We were receiving them, keeping track of them, and then forwarding the reports to U.S. Army Europe headquarters.
Was it your sense, if you can say, that all of the Soviet military liaison vehicles were appropriately marked with the correct license tag?
As far as I know.
Okay.
Because if they were caught in a vehicle not appropriately marked,
mm-hmm.
that was grounds to kick them out of the country.
Yes, it would have been a serious incident. No,
yes.
No question about it. What other kinds of things did the office keep track of?
We reviewed
mm-hmm.
reports of the security inspections and investigations of, not investigations, inspections and surveys of military installations. We followed up to make sure that the units corrected any deficiencies that were noted in these reports.
Okay.
and provided some retail U.S. Army Europe.
Were you also seeing reports from other sectors, other parts of the Western-held sectors?
No.
You were just producing reports and sending them out?
Right.
Okay. Had your rank changed at this point? Were you still in E5?
While I was working at the training section, I get promoted to staff sergeant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that G2 office work?
Not really. I would have rather been out doing background investigations or mm-hmm. working in a day, in something I was more closely aligned with my training.
Okay. And did you have an opportunity to undertake that kind of work while you were in Germany?
Yes, I managed to get back into my parent unit.
Okay, which was?
My original unit, the 6th Military Intelligence Company.
Okay. And you went there from the G2 office?
Right.
Back? Okay. And what was your assignment at that point?
Okay. I forget in which order this okay.
It's okay.
In which order this happened, but
mm-hmm.
part of the time is when I worked in the tech shop.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the time was when I was doing background investigations.
Okay. And you've already described some of what you did in the technical and forensic work.
Right.
Tell me about background investigations. What kinds of tasks did you actually undertake?
Okay. Basically, what happened is when someone was being considered for security clearance
uh-huh.
and was stationed in our area of responsibility or had previously been stationed in our area of responsibility,
mm-hmm.
we would check military police records. We would check local police records, although we had a special liaison section for that, so I didn't get to do that.
Okay.
If they were still in the area, we would check medical records.
Mm-hmm.
We would check personnel records if they were in the area. We would check records at the local credit union.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go out and interview co-workers, former co-workers, commanders, character references, both those that they listed and those we developed on our own. And we were told... In the case of listed character references, we were given the names.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of developed character references that were developed elsewhere, we were given the names. Otherwise, we had to determine the developed references and the commander's co-workers, et cetera.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we were told how many of each kind to interview.
Okay. Were the protocols for those interviews fairly strict, or was it up to you to determine how an interview would unfold?
It was a strict protocol that we learned at the intelligence school at Fort Holabird.
Sure, okay.
But, based on the information derived, we'd have to use our own intelligence and common sense
mm-hmm.
as to what follow-up questions to ask.
Now, you were doing, implied that you did these both, these kinds of investigations and interviews, both for people who were currently military people assigned in your area of responsibility, but also people who had been assigned there before.
Right.
Would it be the case that you had to go through older records sometimes to look back any number of years for information about someone who had been there earlier?
Well, normally it would be, for people who had formerly been there, normally it would be just records.
Okay, not interviews?
Not interviews, unless, the person listed someone who was in the area
okay.
as a reference.
Uh-huh.
In which case, that person, the subject of the investigation, may never have been in that area, just that the person he
sure.
Listed as a reference was there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, if it's somebody who, left Germany 3 months earlier
mm-hmm.
and needs a clearance at his new location, we'd go back, if we were instructed to or given a lead sheet to to go back to his old unit and see if there's anybody there who remembers him.
What about things like medical records? Were those all proprietary military medical records?
Yes.
Okay. So nothing outside. So
nothing outside the military.
Mm-hmm.
And again, only if the person was in the area, and he, because that's where his current records are.
Okay. And it, right, the records, those records follow the person through,
right,
through their assignment. Okay. Did you have any language difficulties in conducting interviews, and how was that handled?
I interviewed mostly military personnel.
Okay.
And civilians working for the Army.
Mm-hmm. Who's English?
We had people there who were fluent in German.
Mm-hmm.
So they interviewed people who where the interviews had to be done in German.
Was this work more appealing to you than some of the paper pushing as you described it earlier?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. Can you say why?
Because I was interacting with people directly.
Okay. It was more people-oriented?
Right.
Okay. Did you feel that that's where your strengths were, as well as your interests?
I think so.
Okay. How long did you stay in Germany, in fact?
I stayed in Germany a little bit over 2 years.
Okay. And not the normal or standard 3 years.
Right.
Under what circumstances did you actually leave?
I was sent to Vietnam.
Did you want to go to Vietnam?
I volunteered to go. I can't say I wanted to go, but I felt it was my duty to go.
Okay. Can you say a little bit about that, Michelle? You volunteered because you felt it was your duty.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk about that sense of duty and why it impelled you to volunteer for Vietnam? Maybe in light of what was happening over there?
Yeah, basically, you know, this was, sometime in 1967.
Uh-huh.
Things, you know, were getting heavy there.
Yes.
And we were, we were losing so much in Germany as far as gasoline allocation and personnel and everything, because the emphasis was on Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And, I joined the, in those days, even though I was 25 or so, I was still somewhat naive about certain political realities.
Okay.
And, you know, I was still, you know, got to fight the commie hordes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I can't do that. I can do that in Vietnam. I can't do that in Germany.
Okay. The work you were doing wasn't really targeted at containing communism in Germany?
No, it was basically, no, it was just basically, basic security stuff.
Sure. Did you have a sense of some urgency that you know the real conflict was in Vietnam? Did it go something like that?
To a degree, yes.
Okay. How did you actually volunteer to go to Vietnam? Did you put paperwork in? Did you talk to your superiors?
I put in paperwork.
Okay.
Part of the reason
mm-hmm.
was that we had a change of command in our unit.
Okay.
And the new commander was not liked or respected by many of us.
So morale was not so great?
Morale was not so great.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other people were doing it. That's what gave me the idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember some of those other servicemen who put in to go to Vietnam?
Not really.
Okay, but just you knew it was happening?
I knew it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people saying, I just put in for Vietnam. It was also considered a ticket to be punched for your career progression.
Yes. Were you thinking along those lines as well?
It was not a major or primary or even major consideration, but it was a consideration.
Okay. Did you consult with anyone? Did you talk to a trusted friend or a superior officer about the wisdom of putting in for Vietnam?
No.
No, you just did it on your own?
On my own.
Okay. When did your orders come through?
My orders came through July, I think.
Okay. And what did they say?
They said I'm being assigned to the 149th MI group in APO so-and-so, San Francisco, which service in Republic of Vietnam.
Okay. Were you pleased?
Yeah, because I asked for it.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes, as you know, between asking and getting, maybe there's a little doubt, but you were fine with it.
I was fine with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have an opportunity to go on leave before reporting?
Right. I went on leave back to New York, visited my folks, and then my mother mentioned that my buddy, the one who I met at the bridge table in 1961, and who I lived near, actually later on, a few years later, had visited her. He and I had lost contact about 2 or 3 years earlier.
I see.
He had gotten out of the Army and managed to figure out which Steiner family in New Rochelle, New York, was mine, and paid my folks a visit. And my mother made an interesting comment. She said, you know, back when you and he were friends and hanging out together, I was thinking that you might be that the two of you might be homosexual, but after meeting him, I know that's not the case.
After meeting him, she knows that's not the case.
Yeah.
Said,
if you were homosexual, you wouldn't have picked someone like him.
Okay. Did she ever say anything else about that?
No.
Just
the fact that when he and I were buddies, we were very, very close friends.
Sure, sure. And your mom kind of picked up on...
And any place we went, you know, off-duty almost all the time we were together.
Yeah, and she picked it up a little bit, yeah. Was she concerned about your posting to South Vietnam?
Of course.
Yeah. What about your dad?
He was concerned, too.
Sure. Did they ask you... Did it come out that you had volunteered?
No.
Okay.
However, my uncle, I was just spending an evening with my uncle and aunt. My uncle came out and said, why did you volunteer for Vietnam? I said, huh? And I forget exactly what my reaction was, but it indicated that, yes, I did. And I don't know how he figured it out or got the idea. But the question came out of the blue and completely surprised me.
That's interesting.
And so I basically told him, but as far as I know, they never told my folks.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how he figured it out.
I don't know.
Maybe he knew you a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe he knew me better than my folks did.
Or he was just watching different things, maybe.
Yeah.
Michelle, let's take a break for a minute.
Okay.